Okay, let us start part B of this audio journey, week 7, to be starting at PDF page 50, which is the propensity score handout, which is based on Appendix A of Rosenbaum and Rubin 1984, but Acrobat will no longer allow me to fold those pages from JSTOR into the lecture, giving me bad parameters. So we'll just have to deal with looking at the formal publication separately, Appendix A, and looking at my write down of the two theorems. And so we have our setup where we have group membership denoted by Z. I usually denote it by G, that is treatment control. Binary variable. We have an X vector of covariates, maybe 72 covariates, maybe 34 in various examples, so a whole lot. So high dimensional data. And the propensity score is a scalar. In the population, the propensity score E or B, depending on the notation, is the probability of being in the treatment given the covariates. And the estimated propensity score, E hat hat, is a scalar. It's the conditional probability of being in the treatment given your values of X. And so you can estimate that by logistic regression or boosted regression or regression trees, all sorts of things. Logistic regression is the traditional way, and that's the way we'll do it here to start. In the spring, we look at the other more modern methods of estimating a probability. The two theorems that I usually show you written out in the paper is Cochrane's theorem, the second one, approximately 90% reduction of bias for subclassifying at quintiles, that is forming 5 groups, population propensity score. And here the basic reduction in bias, 101 minus BS of BI for 5. So 5 is typically, you could go to 10 if you had a lot of data. So you're doing within each subclassification, you're doing a treatment control comparison of people with approximately the same propensity score. Of course, much finer with smaller samples would be pair matching, caliper matching on the propensity score. Here we have enough that we're just doing binning. And then definition of propensity score in the main theorem, a balancing score such that the conditional distribution of X given the propensity score is the same in treated and control units. That is, people of the same balancing score, a score is a balancing score, that is taking the composite of the X's, is a balancing score, so that the distribution of X given BX is the same as treated and control groups. That is, X is conditionally independent of Z, there's no treatment control difference for people with the same level on the balancing score. Of course, this low dimensional balancing score is a propensity score. And the magic is that if you match or balance on the propensity score, you also balance on the X's quite well. And we'll see examples of that by looking at standardized mean differences for each variable, or the Love plot, as it's called after Thomas Love. So the statements about these theorems, propensity score is a balancing score. It's the lowest dimensional balancing score. Any score is finer, propensity score is a balancing score. If treatment assignment is strongly ignorable given X, then it's strongly ignorable given any balancing score. At any value of the balancing score, the difference between treatment and control means is an unbiased estimate of the average treatment effect. At that value of the balancing score, if treatment assignment is strongly ignorable, i.e. no treatment control, pre-existing differences. Using sample estimates, balancing scores can produce sample balance on X, and we can assess that. And if it doesn't work that well, we try harder. And we'll look at the examples. We've seen Rubin breast cancer. We will see aspirin, coronary artery disease with aspirin, that's Love. We'll see SAT coaching and a few other examples, and then we'll want to do data analysis ourselves next week. And at the bottom of this handout, we have the breast cancer, surgery example. We also have Lalonde data, which will be the subject of next week, where we don't have good overlap. You can see in the lowest quintile of the bins, we have 122 controls and only one treated. The second quintile, 116 controls, 7 treated. It's only the upper 3 quintiles we have some data. And we're not going to find a big effect of job training. So that's not just, Lalonde isn't a wonderfully successful example, but it is the canonical example, so we will use it next week and do the analysis. Okay, so on to page 51, more boilerplate propensity score. Close matches on multivariate X, not needed if you can match closely on the scalar propensity score, here phi. Good to combine matching on X with matching on phi. You can improve upon some of these matching. And optimal matching is what Ben Hansen does. This is one of Ben Hansen's slides. Okay, here's a slide from North Carolina Social Work. The general procedure. So you run a logistic regression. This is the basic procedure that's often used. So we have the dependent variable is group membership. If you did job training, not job training. It's unfortunate to call it Y. It's really Z would be a better choice here. Choose the appropriate level of X. Propensity score is predictive probability, it's predictive probability. It's the fits from the logistic regression, not the logits. And so we will, we have to be careful about that to get the right metric, and we'll see that. That's why we showed you Lalonde. Once we have the propensity scores, then we can do stratification, subclassification, 5 bins, that is quintiles, and do treatment control comparisons within each quintile. Or we could do nearest neighbor matching or caliper matching, which is nearest neighbor within a range. If they're close enough, then it's a good match. That's the aspirin example. Okay, so here is for Lalonde. I knew I had it. If we have treatment that is choosing job training, we're going to do a generalized learning model, GLM, logistic regression, and we have our various predictors, age, education, black, these are all our X's, prior salaries, so we're not using the outcome RE78, as we saw when we described the Lalonde data. We run the GLM, and then we get the fitted values of that object. Those are probabilities. We can call these prop scores, propen scores. We called it propen, it's just the fits. Those are going to be in the probability metric, and we'll take a look at that. And you can see that for treatment and control, there's not very good overlap. We'll look at the side-by-side box plots, stratified by quintiles. We come along and we do that, and we get basic table prop bin treat. We just did a cut on the quintiles, and we can look at the mean differences. We can run t-tests or run LMER to get the outcome. So the basic idea is get the propensity score, then we check balance, and we'll do that more carefully, and then stratify on quintiles. If we're stratifying quintiles, check balance, and we'll see plots for doing that. Propensity score methods, here's a Rubens slide. Observational study, analog of complete randomization. Propensity scores probability of treatment versus control as a function of observed covariates. Then you can match on propensity score or subclassify for the only covariate. And if this is successful, creates balance within each subclass on all covariates. And we check that and match it, and Cobalt and other packages will give you nice plots of that. So the GAO study, 6 large clinical trials, observational data available. We saw that, yeah. Okay, because it was so good, I suppose I put in the breast cancer example twice. So we can skip ahead to page 60. We've learned that lesson about subclassification on propensity score and look at aspirin. Picking up page 60 of the PDF, we start our new material after that. Well, it's CRISPR redundancy. We're going to the aspirin example, and we have slides from Thomas Love, the original publication, which is 20 years ago, the infancy of matching, aspirin use and all-cause mortality among patients being evaluated for known or suspected coronary artery disease, a propensity analysis in JAMA. Hooray for JAMA. And so the idea, as we've seen, is emulate a randomized controlled study using matching, and then use standard analysis to compare the matched sets. Here we're going to do something different than the subclassification. We're actually going to do pair matching, and we're going to do old-fashioned pair matching, basically almost by hand. Ben Hansen has optimal matching, which is an improved version of pair matching, one-to-one or one-to-two, which we'll use and describe next week. We're leaving the implementations to next week, and it looks like I have plenty of material for today, somewhat redundant, but plenty of material. So in aspirin, we got 6,000 adults. 2,300, that is a little more than a third, were taking aspirin. We're interested in all-cause mortality, followed up after 3 years. And if you just looked at those that self-selected into taking aspirin versus those that did not, there's no effect of aspirin. Hazard ratio is close to one with a decent confidence interval around it. Okay, but there is self-selection. Maybe sicker people have been told by their doctors to take aspirin, etc., etc. I do take a baby aspirin every day, even though aspirin is no longer a recommended thing. It might be for colon cancer. But this is 20 years ago, we're looking at the matching. So let's take a look. What we're going to concentrate on is the fact that these groups were very, very different, aspirin, non-aspirin, before we did any propensity score matching on them. And after we do matching, we have remarkable balance. So this is a great success story. We're going to treat subjects, going to match to those that didn't receive treatment, those that chose not to take aspirin, but had similar propensity to receive treatment, i.e. are balanced on the X's. Okay, so PDF page 61, propensity score model for aspirin use. We have 31 background characteristics, and these are quite good ones: clinical history, medication use, cardiovascular assessment, and those are quite accurately measured usually, and they are quite different before we do any matching. If we just take the original data set of 6,000 people, 2,000, a little more than 2,000 who took aspirin. So if we take a look before any matching, you can see it's mostly men. Diabetes, much higher in the aspirin group. Hypertension, much higher in the aspirin group. Prior coronary artery disease, much, much higher, 4-to-1, 3-to-1. Heart failure, higher. Medication use of the beta blockers, higher. These are people who take aspirin or the people that are scared of dying. Okay. So the baseline characteristics appear very dissimilar, and these are important baseline characteristics. 25 of 31 covariates are different, 2-3 stars. Almost all of them were significantly different. And aspirin user covariates indicate higher mortality risk. That is, the sicker people chose aspirin, so it's not surprising. Even if aspirin did some good, they got them back to even. So you might be think that aspirin has some good. Okay, so then we come along. For each patient, we compute a propensity score. We have basically the simplest version is a covariate. 31 covariates predict aspirin or not in logistic regression. If we just enter them in as simple linear terms, we get a fitted GLM object. We get a propensity score for each of these 6,000 people. The 2,300 treatments, we're going to match one. So we are going to discard some data. We could use full match or one-to-two matching even to do a better job. But this is before those options were available 20 years ago. So that on PDF page 61, we see how different they were before matching. We'll see that again in a plot. PDF page 62, matching of the propensity score. Compute the propensity score by logistic regression. Take an aspirin user, match the non-user with Prosa's propensity score with some limit calipers like 0.01. Eliminate both patients from pool and repeat until you can't find an acceptable match. Now, optimal matching looks overall at this pair matching problem, as we'll describe it with the nuclear plants. That's what Ben Hansen would do. Or you could just do a full match and not throw away any data. But we don't have the data to show. So this is their procedure. So matching on gender within, yes, account. How were the aspirin subject matched? Try to match each aspirin user to a unique non-user with a propensity score identical to 5 digits. So they differ more at less than 0.000001. 4-digit match, 3-digit match, finally 1-digit match. So 58% of the 2,300 were matched. So they got 1,351 to 1,351 unique on users. So you're throwing away a lot of data. We wouldn't do that these days. But they picked the subset of the treatment group, only kept a little more than half of them, and matched those. So this is a little severe. Let's see how well it works. So the baseline characteristics after matching, 30 of 31 covariates show non-significant difference. Peak exercise is a little bit different. Aspirin, no aspirin. You can see men is about the same, diabetes is about the same, hypertension about the same, prior coronary artery disease about the same, et cetera, et cetera. So on this deep subset, and this is pretty severe, you get pretty good matches. And one way of quantifying that's used throughout is to use the standardized mean difference, which is really an effect size. So for measured variables, it's just treatment control difference divided by the pooled standard deviation. You can put it in a percent metric. Binary variables, just difference of the proportions. And the rule of thumb is try to keep these less than 10%, or effect size 0.1. And we'll see on the plot how well we did on looking at the standardized mean difference for this very heavily selected subset. So that's PDF page 65. And here we are, PDF page 66, which is our covariate balance. This is a love plot. So before match, the standardized difference, you can see, went out to 50% or 100% on some of these variables, such as prior cardiac artery disease. So you can see these are quite important: lipids, risk, prior that ischemic, etc. There were big differences. And after this pair matching, which did throw away a good bit of data, you can see you're basically within 10% on everything. In fact, right on. So treatment control groups, even though they're severe subsets, definitely are well matched. You could either look at positive, negative in the top frame, or absolute standard, and you get to see it easier there. You can see the standardized differences are very small, less than 10% on the match group, whereas very large on the original 6,600 people. PDF page 3. So this is a great success story for using the propensity score with pair matching, and more modern methods would probably do a little better or be able to use more of the data. So 1,350 aspirin subjects matched well to non-aspirin subjects. Big improvement in resulting matched pairs analyzed using standard statistical methods. That is, hazard functions. Do these two groups differ on their survival? And basically here, then we get for the propensity score match sample, we get a very nice hazard ratio. Hazard is cut in half for aspirin use. But again, we used a matched sample that threw away a lot of data. 4% versus 8% on death rate. And on PDF page 68, we have the original publication, just giving you the idea of matching propensity score, 1,351 patients. Aspirin use among patients undergoing stress was independently associated with reduced long-term all-cause mortality. So aspirin worked. According to here, we've had other studies since. But we're showing you the improvement in balance that potentially could be done, and we could do the matching better, but this was ancient times. And here's some. Although use of observational studies for assessment of treatment effects is controversial, recent work has suggested that observational studies, when properly done, are not likely to produce misleading effects, biased results. We use propensity analysis to enable an even more rigorous adjustment for selection bias. Nonetheless, it must be acknowledged that observation studies can only partially control factors actually measured and can adjust for these factors only as well as the instrument used to measure them is capable. In contrast, randomization is a wonderful tool. So that's PDF page 70. So we've gone through the aspirin example. The next example, PDF page 71, is the example from Rosenbaum and Rubin, which is surgery versus medicine for coronary artery disease. So this one's almost 40 years old, and the technology is even more limited. Back then, as I know, you needed a 9-track tape to do logistic regression. It was non-trivial. This is before GLMs were common, and before packages such as R made them easy to run. So here we have 15 subjects. A third were surgical patients, and the other two-thirds were medical patients, approximately. We have 74 covariates, giving a wonderful detail from the charts, medical history, lab and exercise test results, patient histories, and demographics. And starting out, each of the 74 covariates were significantly different, comparing surgical to medical patients. So we have the self-selection is very severe. People that chose bypass surgery versus drug were very, very different people. Then we're going to go ahead and do propensity score quintiles, remove over 90% of selection bias. That's our theorem, PDF page 71 from Love's Talks. He's now got them in PowerPoint form. Logistic regression was used to predict treatment assignment for each of the 1,515 subjects on the basis of 74 covariates themselves, some interactions, some quadratic terms, and they went through that to achieve balance. So there's a long story. For almost every surgical patient, there's a comparable medical patient in terms of having similar estimated probability of surgery. So surgery is the treatment. And if we look at the propensity scores, you can see propensity for surgery, and that's going to be higher for surgical patients. But you can see even for people, basically there's some overlap of the middle 50%, the interquartile area. The box plot shows you the median and the two quartiles. And so we get some decent overlaps. Now, of course, they're going to be different because there is self-selection. But there is enough overlap to do decent matching. Better overlap than we see in Lalonde. So from the original JASA paper, September 84, here's the box plots in old-fashioned online printer form. And balanced subclasses may be used to estimate the average effects of medicine and surgery on survival functional improvement. So here we have a version of the overlapping box plots. And so back to Love's slides, 15 patients are divided into five strata of 303 patients each. And so propensity score, higher probability. So the lowest propensity score is going to have 26 surgery patients, which is not zero, and 277 medical. The middle has 98 surgery patients and 205. That's about one-third. One-third as it is in the full sample, and in the highest strata, you have mostly surgery patients. So you have a good comparison. You have enough to do t-tests within each strata or of ours. And if you look at balance, for example, percent with left main stenosis, which is a big medical indicator, you can see within each subclass, surgery versus medical are decently balanced. They're pretty equivalent. And we'll see from PSA graphics package another plot of that sort of thing. So that's how we check balance. We just look at whether there are treatment control differences and some important covariates, this one being quite medically important, that are left over. There were big differences before, but once we do the subclassification, people with similar propensity, do they have similar values on these medically important variables? That's PDF page 74. PDF page 75, more love. You can see a number of diseased vessels. That's quite important. And you can see that they're pretty well balanced in each of the subclassifiers, each of the quintiles of propensity score. And so now survival at 6 months or improvement, you can see within each subclass, medication seems to be better. If I look at this correctly, I haven't looked at this in a while. Probability survived. Uninterrupted improvement, that is quality of life, is much higher for the surgery patients. So medicine has slightly higher survival rate because surgery is dangerous. But look at the giant quality of life indicators, which is the improved functioning. And you can see that perhaps surgery is the way to go, has a slightly higher risk, 10%, you know, 8% versus 12%, et cetera, et cetera. But you do the surgery for a better quality of life. Surgery is risky. That's what we get from page 75 for the outcomes. And that gives us a quick overview of the Rosenbaum and Rubin demonstration of using quintile subclassification for the propensity score. The next big example, which is going to be full matching, is Ben Hansen's original paper, 2005, full matching in an observational study of coaching for the SAT. And this is a different kind, but a big controversy. Can the SAT be coached? And well, now these days we're getting rid of the GREs and everything else, so the question may be moot, but coaching has been a controversial thing. Also, defining what coaching is controversial. Sometimes people, especially anti-testing people, tend to say looking at the sample books is coaching. No, it isn't. That's doing due diligence. I did that. But going to these god-awful 10 a.m. Saturday SAT classes is definitely coaching. I don't know why anyone would do that to anyone, but there are stories behind that. So propensity scores, people self-select into these coaching sessions, these, you know, sitting in a room doing drill and practice on vocabulary words and all sorts of other things, paying a lot of money to be coached on the SAT. Does that improve your scores? And SAT would be happy if, ETS would be happy if it didn't. So lots of studies have been done on that. People self-select into coaching or not, so we don't really have a clean comparison. But maybe with full matching or any kind of propensity score method, we can get a better idea of what the effect of coaching is. If a person who wasn't coached instead had been coached, how much would have their score improved? Not much, turns out. We'll see the estimates. And this is an example of full matching where we're using all the treatment and all the non-treated people, all the coach and non-coach, and forming subclasses of equal propensity or close to equal propensity and analyzing within those. And that's a very useful way of matching. And we'll see the remarkable balance improvement we get here. Aspirin was a case where we threw away a lot of data. Here we throw away no data. Not even of the reservoir group. There's Ben Hansen, a Berkeley stat PhD and at Michigan. Oh, let's give him props, and writer of OpMatch, which is used in Match It or Straight in OpMatch, and among other things. Okay, full matching propensity scores relieves the analyst of the need to reject lots of control subjects in order to get comparable groups. It doesn't ward off problems due to lurking variables. There can be things we left out that are important. That's why we do sensitivity analysis. And that's a lurking experiment. And we have paper, and this is talk. Okay, SAT, effective coaching. The original Powers and Don Rock, sample 200 SAT warm registrants in 95-96. Treatment is being coached for the SAT. Outcomes are SAT scores. Coaching and SAT. PDF page 79, PDF page 80. The original propensity match analysis used only about 500 of the 4,000 available observations. The one analysis gave the largest coaching effects. Okay, so he's going to improve this. The similar treatment and control groups. The challenge on matching on propensity to be coached. If you do the propensity scores based on a whole bunch of covariates, which we'll see in a moment, PDF page 81, these overlapping histograms will create also. It's easy to do in R. So the ones that are coached have higher propensity, and there's lots of uncoached people that don't have a good match for a propensity person. So they are quite dissimilar, but we'll overcome that. PDF page 81. Problem, compare a treatment group, PDF page 82, histogram propensity scores, non-propensity scores. Propensity is a linear discriminant. Only full matching will fully adapt, and that's his favorite, and we'll illustrate it next week. So here we have, for full matching from the JASA paper, variable math section of PSAT, mean SAT, respondents first Charles, father's education, average math grade, foreign language years taken. And we have 27 pretreatment variables. The coached and uncoached groups differ appreciably on these recorded measures. And we're going to look at standardized bias, i.e. the effect size, difference between the two groups on some variable V divided by the pooled standard deviation in the treated and control groups. Table shows only 5 covariates. The analyst may address bias all 27, and that's what he does. And then here is Generate RI Tools. We'll generate the love plots. And it's, again, you may want to blow it up, PDF page 84. Original open circles shows you for all the test scores, demographic profile, number of courses in high school, experience, high school grades, massive differences between those that coached and those that didn't coach. But after you do full matching, where you're getting small subgroups, and we'll look at examples of that, that are similar on the propensity score, you can see how remarkably good the balance is. Everything's less than 10%, even though they were shockingly different beforehand. That's a great success story. You don't always get that, but this is a pretty remarkable success story. Using the propensity score and full matching balance things in a tough situation. So getting to the outcome analysis, after you do the subclassification and compare outcomes, after you get there and you've seen good balance, 26 points on math, 1 point on verbal. And standard errors are about 5 points in those estimates. Whereas the unadjusted differences were much bigger. So not much effect of coaching. Definitely not worth putting your kid through it. Page 86, the last example is a more recent example by non-technical people, definitely, clearly, but it's back to our breastfeeding example. Remember, we found that associations and regression adjustment studies consistently found great benefits for breastfeeding on cognitive development. And we saw back Ohio State study, when you did a sibling study, you didn't see it, even though the regression adjustments or the associations would show it. Here's a propensity score analysis. Study shows no long-term cognitive benefit to breastfeeding. And the CNN treatment here is pretty good. This may be the best journalism they've done in a couple decades. So, new study published in the journal Pediatrics finds that breastfeeding has little impact on long-term cognitive development behavior. 7,000 Irish children, 3 years and again at 5 years. Vocabulary and problem-solving skills at age five, got things, and we'll take a look at propensity score matching. Remember, there's a lot of self-selection here based on mom's SES, education, income. Yep. And that's the problem. So how do you properly control for your confounding variables? We had education, level, and income, which are good variables to have in the propensity score analysis. Do kids who are breastfed have better outcomes? PDF page 87 in CNN. The answer is yes. The difficult question is it breast milk that improves their brain, or is it growing up with parents who are better educated and have better incomes that makes a difference? Very nicely done. All those confounders, self-selection into breastfeeding. Okay, so here is the paper, and this is our last example, so we're almost done. Mixed evidence from correlational studies that breastfeeding impacts children's development. We're going to take a look at the impact of breastfeeding on children's cognitive and non-cognitive development. Propensity score matching was used to compare the average treatment effect those that were breastfed. Before matching, breastfeeding was associated with better development on almost every outcome. After matching and adjustment for multiple testing, only one of the 13 outcomes remained significant: hyperactivity. And that's at age three. Age five, nothing. No support was found for significant gains at 5 years, suggesting earlier observed benefit breastfeeding may not be maintained. It's a quasi-experimental technique which mimics random assignment. Pediatrics has lots of boxes and stuff, but it is a AMA journal. And so we'll take a look a little more detail. This will be familiar, just showing you that people do things. And after all, we do have an answer on the breastfeeding question, which we looked at as one of our regression adjustments example. And you can see these things make a difference. Doing a bad job in observational studies will get you a different answer than doing a better job. Without randomization of mothers to breastfeeding-informed conditions, it is challenging to confirm the causal impact of these hypotheses. The causal complications of breastfeeding are questionable given the inherent difficulty in controlling for selection into breastfeeding. All that is good. And we have a lot of data, so maybe we can do some good. PDF page 89. Okay, turning to PDF page 90. Here is main purpose showing you this page. Here are all the background characteristics they have. They have birth weight, they have delivery mode, they have maternal depression, ethnicity, maternal age, working, education. So got a good amount of the kinds of variables that are associated with self-selection into breastfeeding. And so they did PSM as propensity score methods, matching children who were breastfed and children who were not, had similar probabilities. And we've seen that PDF page 90. Okay, they did nearest neighbor matching. We use PSM logit models with nearest neighbor one-to-one matching. So for every breastfed kid, you get a nearest neighbor match. And we'll look how to do that, improve upon that with optimal matching next week. So this is a simple one-to-one, like kind of like aspirin, but we're not throwing away as much data. In nearest neighbor matching, the sample is randomly ordered with matching occurring sequentially between treatment and control based on participants' propensity scores. And there isn't a strong caliper. We posed a caliper so pairs well match if propensity score was in a tenth of a standard deviation of the others. You could do matching with pricing. Balance checks, so they did check then to see if these covariates for the matched pairs were relatively well balanced, and all revealed substantial reduction of bias. They don't show us a love plot to match groups on all individual confounders. So got pretty good, pretty close to 10. They think 20 is okay. Well, it's a little loose. USTATA. Well, good for them. Okay, so they did one-to-one matching, and they found out that after you do that, the advantages of breastfeeding typically go away because you're doing a decent job of balancing the self-selection. So here we are at about 100 minutes, so we should call week 7 to a close. And reason why I stopped here, page 92, well, I was about right on time. We're a little bit under time, but not much. Next week, we will do seriously the data analysis and statistical procedures. So this was all a lot of talk, a lot of vocabulary, a lot of hand-waving about examples, but that's good to do before we get into the technical detail of doing Lalonde, doing nuclear plants, and doing other details about the packages that are available, which are a lot. We'll just jump into a couple and tell you about others. In the spring quarter, we do additional work on this, but we'll get us a quick start with Matchett and Cobalt next week. So let's call week 7 to a close at about 102 minutes, so we're a little bit under time, and we'll use that back next week. Thank you very much.